Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 20th of October. It's All Things Political Monday at 9, and we'll be welcoming your phone calls as we talk about a number of issues. Can you believe it's only 2 weeks and one day from the presidential election? So we have a lot to talk about. We'll look at a new endorsement. Is it a big endorsement from Colin Powell for Barack Obama yesterday? We are going to concentrate a bit on Ohio because our guest is an expert on Ohio. He is Alexander Lamas, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University, and he's just put together an Ohio presidential election preview as 2008 presidential campaign enters the final stretch. Ohio, he says, is one of a dozen difficult-to-predict battleground states. He will be looking at two historical facts that will keep media attention on the state. No Republican has ever been elected president without carrying Ohio. And the historic 2006 election in Ohio witnessed a remarkable Democratic Party comeback after a generation of Republican dominance in the state. We'll also be looking at voting in Ohio, which was the subject of some lawsuits and the U.S. Supreme Court deciding not to take up the case. What are the ramifications of that? We'll look at the incredible amount of money that Barack Obama has raised in the month of September, and we'll look at the polls now and see whether or not complacency could be a problem for Obama, whether or not the polls are indicating that this is his election to win, and welcome your phone calls. We'll take them early today because I know you're excited to talk about politics. Our number, 800-486-8655. Our email address, talk@WPR.org. And our guest, Professor Alexander Lamas, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. He's a scholar of American electoral change. He's written book chapters and articles on elections and political parties, and is the author of an award-winning book, The Two-Party South. He is joining us this morning for All Things Political. Alexander, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Hi.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good.
Good. Let's start with the endorsement by Colin Powell yesterday. A lot has been made of that. Is that a significant endorsement for Senator Barack Obama?
Absolutely. That's a breakthrough, I think, for Senator Obama. It validates him for some people who might just be on the fence at this point.
It validates him in what way? Militarily?
In the sense that, one, he's an esteemed member of former Republican administrations. He's somebody who's looked up to by millions of Americans. And he made a very forceful endorsement by picking Obama over his friend of 25 years, as he said, John McCain. And he gave, convincing reasons.
It was a forceful endorsement, wasn't it? He went on for something like 7 minutes uninterrupted,
right,
giving reason after reason after reason.
Seemed to be like an editorial that you would that you are reading now in many newspapers supporting,
right,
one candidate or the other.
Mm-hmm. And the editorial endorsements are certainly going one direction, not exclusively, but Obama's picked up a lot over the weekend.
He certainly has.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Sarah Palin for a moment and her appearance on Saturday Night Live, which was very funny. Does something like that serve her well? Or I can't quite imagine sitting there and getting mocked as ferociously as she did and keeping her cool. Is this a good thing for candidates to do? Is it a necessary thing to be on comedy shows?
Oh, I think so. It humanizes the candidates. I thought the appearance of both Senator McCain and Senator Obama at the Al Smith dinner the other day,
mm-hmm,
was really a great event for American politics, because they were both quite humorous in their remarks, which went on for about 15 minutes each, and they showed genuine affection for each other in the middle of this bitterly fought campaign.
It was something you haven't seen really on the campaign trail very much. You wish that there were a few more jokes. It would serve us well,
right,
don't you think?
Well, exactly. And back to Sarah Palin, I mean, I think she did herself well by going on Saturday Night Live. Apparently she charmed a lot of the people in the cast who were not favorably disposed to her in a political sense. There was a lot of talk about that this morning on MSNBC's Morning Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Which some of your listeners may have caught. But that was quite an amazing appearance, even though there wasn't a whole lot of time devoted to her.
Right. The other thing is that we've learned that the Obama campaign raised $150 million in September. The old record was $66 million that the same campaign had said only 1 month earlier. Does he have too much money now? Is he going to be running so many ads that people will say enough already?
Well, he's certainly not going to be lacking, for any money. And he's bought that 30 minutes of TV time for October the 29th that I think is going to go across all the major networks. But there are other, there are other places you can put the money in the last month. I mean, in the last week, 2 weeks and a day, and that would be turnout the vote efforts. So I don't think any politician is going to say they have too much money.
Are you getting absolutely flooded with ads in Ohio?
Yes, and for certain, and that will be the case in all the battleground states. But looking at that huge amount of money, you have to recognize that this is unprecedented in American politics, and that it's a reflection of the personal appeal that Obama has for so many millions of people who really haven't been all that involved in politics before. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of post-election analysis of who the donors were and their backgrounds and so forth. But, you know already that there are really hundreds of thousands of people who probably haven't given to a presidential campaign before.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Ohio, where you are. As you write, everybody understands no Republican has ever been elected president without carrying Ohio. What do you think? Where is it now?
Well, according to the latest polls, it's dead even.
Oh, my gosh.
Despite the fact that, Senator Obama is between 4 and 6 points ahead in all the national polls, and of course, he's ahead in many states, including Wisconsin. There was a poll released just yesterday. It was the Mason-Dixon NBC poll that showed the race in Ohio down to 1 percentage point. Actually, Obama was behind 1 percentage point, even though it's all within the margin of error. Wisconsin, on the other hand, showed Obama 12 points ahead in that same poll.
Yeah, I guess that the McCain camp pretty much has given up on Wisconsin. They're running some ads, but right. not very many.
But probably the way to get at the significance of Ohio is to just broaden the discussion to the whole electoral map for a minute, if that's okay.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the electoral map from 2004, which I think is the correct way to proceed, given that we've been in a fairly stable party system now in the years of the 21st century, if you go back to 2004, you see Kerry had 252 electoral votes. Those blue states they flash up regularly on television, and he's way ahead in all of them, and Wisconsin would be one. And then there's another state that's kind of wavered in recent years, and that's Iowa. And he's way ahead in Iowa now, too. So nobody doubts that Obama will carry Iowa. So that gives him seven more. So that's 259 electoral votes that I'm confident, unless there's some dramatic change in the election, in the next 2 weeks, that Obama will carry. So he's only 11 electoral votes away from winning the presidency. And you can go to different places to get those 11 electoral votes. One would be Ohio, of course. And then that would be in keeping with the pattern that when Republicans don't carry Ohio, they don't win the election in a close contest. But what Obama has done is opened up the fairly static two-party pattern in the last two elections to make several other states competitive, Colorado and New Mexico. And Virginia, I think those are probably the three most promising for him right now. Even though people talk about Florida and Nevada and a few others, but a combination of Colorado and New Mexico would do it. Virginia by itself would do it because it has 13 electoral votes, or Colorado and Nevada would do it. Even though New Mexico is probably a better shot for Obama.
So he wouldn't need Ohio.
Exactly. he wouldn't need Ohio. And but in those other states, it's very close too: Virginia, Colorado, and Nevada. I mean, they're about even. But Obama is doing well in a few other states, making it very close that I haven't mentioned. And one is Missouri, and the other is Indiana.
Right.
And Missouri is a battleground state that has a record of always going with the winner, and Indiana is, you know, it's very interesting that it's in play because it hasn't voted Democratic since 1964.
What do you see, Alexander, as the difference, which I have a hard time understanding, between Wisconsin and Ohio? Why is Wisconsin, Obama, so far ahead, and Ohio, it's just neck and neck?
Well, I guess an easy answer would say that the Republican Party is stronger here in Ohio, but that is true, and that's part of it. You alluded to in the beginning that the Democrats had a big victory in Ohio in 2006. But that came after about 15 years of Republicans dominating practically every election, every statewide election in the legislature and others here in Ohio. And that hasn't been the case in Wisconsin. You've had a much more lively and competitive Democratic Party. That's one thing. The other thing I think is important, and I don't want to go into too much background on electoral change, but in the last three or four decades, you know, we've had a sea change in American electoral politics. We call it in political science a realignment. We have different names for it. Some people call it the culture wars realignment. I prefer the term the 25 years realignment. But at any rate, it's about a lot of these cultural issues that have arisen that were new to the party system. Coming into the 1960s and 70s, the parties weren't divided along the lines of these hot-button social issues like gay rights or abortion or prayer in the schools. They were divided on other grounds. But these new issues have reshuffled the party system, and I think as it has worked out, the more culturally liberal states have sided with national Democrats, and the more culturally conservative states are where the Republicans do well. And I think I might be mistaken about Wisconsin, but my impression is it's probably more culturally liberal than Ohio.
Right. I think you're right. Do you have the election thing all worked out now in Ohio, the voting all worked out? Will there be other challenges to this?
All I can say is I hope so. I hope we don't have the embarrassment that we had in 2004. But I don't know. You know, this latest court fight is, you know, it's one thing, and that's over now. And I'm not, you know, I'm not really into all those details, I have to say. But I'm just hoping that we don't have a lot of people turned away, you know, not turned away, but kept waiting a long time at the polls, which we've seen leads people to leave and not come back.
Do you want to give us an idea of what kind of turnout you think there will be? Some say it's going to be so big that you're going to have to expect to be in a line for a long period of time, Election Day.
Well, of course, that's where this early voting can be important, and nobody, I think, really knows who benefits, you know, from the early voting. But that's going on now, and of course, once those votes are in, those people don't have to worry about long lines.
Right.
But I do think we'll have a good turnout all over the country. I mean, there is so much interest in this election. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. I teach a class on the presidential election, and I have 47 students, which compared to other presidential elections is about twice as many.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In fact, usually it's about 25 or 20 to 25. I have to go back to 1992 to find a class this large.
Oh, my.
I think I had about 50 in that class. And,
ooh,
of course, that was a very memorable election,
sure,
too, in 1992.
That's more work for you, right? You have to
well,
grade
no,
more papers.
In fact, it's great because I have the students write individual papers on all the states. So we have all 50 states covered.
Good.
They're following the election state by state.
Let's welcome phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. It's All Things Political for this Monday, just 2 weeks and one day before the presidential election. And our guest is Professor Alexander Lamas. He's Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. And we're welcoming phone calls about all aspects of the race, the Colin Powell endorsement, the amount of money that Barack has, whether or not his voters may be becoming complacent and may not turn out on election day, what the newspaper endorsements mean, and what your thoughts are about this election. A couple lines are open right now, and I pretty much guarantee you they won't. Oops, there they go. All right, just wait for there to be an opening, and there will. 800-486-8655. I do want to remind you that we're going to be broadcasting live Thursday, October 30th, and this is the day after Obama has that 30-minute of airtime that he's bought on the networks, which will be interesting to respond to. We'll be looking at the presidential campaign. Our guests, of course, will be from both the McCain campaign and the Obama campaign. And because we're broadcasting from Marquette, we're going to have Marquette students with us. And I've heard from several history and civics professor teachers in various parts of Wisconsin who are bringing some of their classes to this event. So it should be just terrific. We'll have a reception following our live broadcast. It's from 9 to 11, Thursday, October 30th, and we'd love to meet you in person and talk politics, a special edition, really, of All Things Political. So if you'd like to come, we just want to know how much coffee to have, and maybe we'll have donuts or something afterward. So please call and make a reservation, even though it's entirely free. 414-227-2047. 414-227-2047. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now and start with Mike from Oshkosh. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning, Professor. As an independent who I think has a pretty good grasp on what's going on and pretty objective about this, I think Obama is so far ahead that he's probably at the point that he could actually start showing some leadership on the issues that he's probably going to confront, well, definitely going to confront when he gets into office. And I'm really troubled, I mean really troubled by an ad that I saw recently. I would call it scorched earth politics, where he's trumpeting out the old campaign stuff of getting the elderly out there, claiming that if we privatize Social Security in any way, that it's basically just going to give it off to the stock market. He's going to confront, probably in his first few months, the effort to create an entitlement reform commission, which is going to have to be open-ended. There's going to have to be a consensus on both sides, which it does not take anything off the table. So by running this ad, he's already basically stacking this commission, making it almost impossible for them to do their work. And I'm really troubled by this lack of leadership on his part, knowing he's probably going to win. And I'm curious to know what the guest thinks of that.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Well, my guess is that the campaign doesn't quite see it the way you just said. They in these campaigns, politicians are very nervous, even when they're a little bit ahead in the polls. So I think that explains why this is going to be hard-hitting all the way to the wire. You know, you've probably heard Obama in the last couple of days say, to his supporters, don't get overconfident. Remember New Hampshire, where he was ahead in the New Hampshire primary, you know, coming out of the Iowa, his victory in Iowa, and then of course, lost to Senator Clinton, and they had a long battle after that for the nomination. But I think your point about the difficulties that the next president will face is exactly right, and I know they're both candidates are quite conscious of that, and that they'll just, but it's something they're putting off until they're elected, and I think, of course, at that point they will back off of anything that's been said if they need to go into a commission to look at Social Security and other entitlements.
There are so many things to look at. It's hard to imagine what either McCain or Obama is going to be facing come January. The wars and this horrible economy and energy situation and Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, and what a plateful.
That's right. It really is reminiscent, frankly, of Franklin Roosevelt coming in 1932. Being elected in 1932 and taking over in 1933. And it was a great opportunity for him. And, of course, as history has judged, he rose to that challenge and even led a major restructuring of American politics. But it didn't have to happen that way, and we don't know how it'll happen starting next year.
We go to Joy next from West Bend. Hi, Joy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been getting increasingly anxious lately with the divisiveness. I'm not a person who wants to live in fear at all, but there's been, there is definitely racism, whether people talk about it or not. There's talk about Obama being a terrorist and people yelling at rallies, kill him. There's concern about voter rolls being purged so that that'll affect the vote, and voting machines could affect the outcome. So I'm wondering if anybody else is anticipating fallout after the election. I guess what I would like to hear Obama say before the election would be, if I appear to have lost this election, I want everyone to stay calm. I'm going to stand here and wait for all the votes to be counted and an investigation to be made. I'd like to hear maybe John McCain say, if Obama wins, let's give him a chance. I'd like to hear some kind of calming measures before the election.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can understand that. I think everyone remembers 2000 election and how tense that was. We came out of it, fine. And, of course, there were no racial undertones to speak of. I mean, there were some in the Florida vote. But I think, maybe in that Al Smith dinner that we referred to earlier, where they met in such congenial circumstances and traded jokes, about a lot of these charges, frankly. I mean, they joked about them all. You remember when McCain pointed to Obama in the second debate and said, that one that was mm-hmm. later criticized as an inappropriate way to refer to his opponent. Well, that was one of the jokes they both referred to. Obama said, you need to understand that Barack in Swahili is translated that one.
Right.
and then McCain made a joke about it too. So I think they started down that path, and we just hope it's a clear cut victory one way or the other, and it's not a disputed election.
Thanks very much, Joy, for your call. Let's go to Fred from Waters Meet, Michigan. Hi, Fred.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Just wanted to make a couple of comments. One, I think this election will be remembered by the statement that they once said that if Obama lost, it was because he didn't select Hillary as a running mate. I think if Obama does win, they'll say the reason McCain lost was his selecting Sarah Palin for his VP running mate. The other comment, I'm very fearful, and both me and my wife were very sad with Ohio in the last election, along with Florida, in terms of hanky-pank and voter suppression. And it was not only just long lines. We remember well that they closed the polling places early, especially the black areas. They changed the polling places where the blacks were supposed to vote. The voting machines didn't work. I just hope that there's not a repeat of this in Ohio. And that's my comment.
Thanks, Fred. Thanks for your call. Is it all cleared up? I would imagine a lot of attempts have been made, and you've got a Democrat now who's in charge of elections.
That's right. So. There is a Democrat is Secretary of State now, which maybe give more confidence to Democrats. But she is going to try to be even-handed, I think. But yes, I think a lot of attention has been given to this. I know, in the Cleveland area, Cuyahoga County being the large county, encompasses Cleveland. There've been the elections board has been in the news for really almost the whole 4-year period as these matters have been aired, and I think we're ready. I don't think it'll be a repeat of 2004.
And what about Sarah Palin? Do you think that she is a liability?
Well, I think she's a liability in the sense that for someone positioned like McCain in the Republican Party, he might have been better served by bringing on a running mate who could appeal to the moderates in the party, particularly in the Northeast, in states like Pennsylvania, even Ohio and elsewhere. Somebody like Tom Ridge, let's say. I thought that, you know, right when the announcement was made, when I didn't know really anything about Sarah Palin.
Nobody did.
Right. And, I mean, of course, you know, being the first Republican woman to be selected for that slot, that created a lot of excitement. But as people came to see where she identified in the spectrum of the Republican Party, it turned off a lot of the moderates in the suburbs of Philadelphia, other areas of, around the big cities where you have very socially liberal voters who sometimes vote Republican, sometimes vote Democratic. And so from that perspective, I think she hurt. Now, when it, you know, it comes to her qualifications, well, you know, a lot of people have said things about her and that she doesn't know enough to be president and all of that. But she certainly has countered some of that with you know, her forceful appearances and speaking in public gatherings, generating excitement and that sort of thing. Of course, she hadn't answered a lot of questions, as we know.
Thank you very much, Fred, for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. It's All Things Political here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and our guest is Professor Alexander Lamis, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. And we have one line open right now. Earl is next from Brown Deer. Hi, Earl.
Good morning, Kathleen and Professor, and thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I just have one quick question, and that is that I've been registered in my voting precinct for 40-some years, and I went in to make sure that I hadn't been kicked off of the rolls because I've heard some of that commentation. I'm on there, and I was thinking about casting an early ballot, but I'm also concerned on Election Day I can go in, vote, see my ballot, and see it counted. How do I know if I cast that absentee ballot now that it's going to be counted on Election Day? That gives me some concern, and I'll take your answer on that.
Thanks, Earl.
I think the machinery is there to, you know, so that you can be confident they're going to count them. I know in some places they actually, and this is before we had a flood of early voting, they didn't count the absentee ballots until after the election. And if the election wasn't at all close, and there weren't enough absentee ballots to make a difference, you know, in some down ballot elections, they may not have counted them or waited a long time. I haven't really studied the 50 states and their electoral machinery, but I think you can, you know, in the presidential election in Wisconsin, you can count. They're going to count those votes.
I remember something that Chuck Todd said probably about a month and a half ago, that because there is so much early voting, this election would have been decided by October 15th. Do you think that's true? There's that much early voting that's taken place?
I haven't seen data on it, and my guess is no, that the bulk of the voting is still going to be on Election Day. But you know, in Colorado, they're voting by mail. They expect half the people to vote by mail, and they can start casting those ballots now.
Isn't that something? Half the people voting by mail.
Yeah, well, in Oregon, all the people vote by
mail.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, in Ohio, Pennsylvania, you know, the bulk of people are going to be voting on Election Day.
Paula is next from Algoma. Hi, Paula.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a question with all this talk about the ACORN and the false registrations. Can those actually turn into votes, or coming voting day, they won't be able to vote, will they? I mean, if they're not there, they're fake.
Yeah, that's right. Now, if somebody, you know, it's put down a fictitious name and then went in to vote, that vote might very well go through. If it's then, you know, later challenged, you know, that person can go to jail. I mean, we have, you know, some stiff penalties. But I don't think that those names that Acorn got, particularly the ones with Mickey Mouse and the other laughable names, that you're going to see anybody voting those names.
Thanks, Paula, very much for your call. Do you think the Republicans are wise? They have made it an issue. It hasn't been as strong over the weekend. Do you think they're wise to hammer this issue?
Well, certainly they're right to demand a fair registration process and that no one votes who is not eligible to vote, and that the people vote in their proper precincts. But that is, is not something that we've really, you know, I think had a serious problem with, you know, in this country. We've had eras way in the past where, you know, they're more than a little voting fraud, but I don't think it's a serious problem today.
We have an email for you, Teresa from Viroqua. I was very impressed with Obama's fundraising and his plan of action, people on the ground in most states, and is making traditional Republican states competitive, fighting in places like Montana and West Virginia. What are the chances that Obama will take some of these more traditionally Republican states?
Like, what were the ones mentioned? Montana?
Montana and West Virginia. And you can also add Indiana if you want. Or
yeah, in Indiana. Well, that's interesting. Montana, you know, has a lively Democratic Party. They're outgunned in presidential elections, but they do win. You know, they have won the governorship, and they have, a state legislative contingent. They were able to win that narrow U.S. Senate seat in 2006. But that, of course, was with a Montana resident who was, you know, well known, had a political career in the legislature. I think it's a stretch for a national Democrat to carry Montana, even with things going fairly favorably in other Western states. Now, West Virginia, on the other hand, is another fascinating and very different state. You know, West Virginia was one of the few states to vote for Michael Dukakis when he lost in 1988. People forget that, and so it has been in the Democratic column in some hard elections for Democrats. The last two elections, it voted for Bush, and people tie that with some of the cultural issues, particularly gun control, that people there are concerned about a liberal Democrat taking away their gun rights. But this year, given the hard how hard the economic issue is playing against the Republicans, Barack Obama is doing reasonably well in the polls. He's not ahead by any means, but he's within I think 5 or 6 points in the last one I saw. So if he closes well nationally, he might make it close in West Virginia.
Well, it is true, it's hard to deny this, that his numbers really took off when the economy took a nosedive.
And that occurred about the same time also as the first debate. And I think it's hard to tell which was the more important. I think that the debate was very important because it put to rest some of the talk about Obama that he was not presidential, that he was too inexperienced. The same thing happened with John Kennedy in 1960. People forget, you know, because of the Kennedy legacy in the presidency, but they forget coming into that election, Kennedy was seen as something of a playboy, inexperienced, had a weak record in the Senate. And I won't go so far as to say a joke, but he was seen as not anywhere near as experienced as Richard Nixon, who had been vice president for 8 years and actually stepped in when Eisenhower was ill twice. But when they stepped on the stage together and Kennedy held his own, in the first and the rest and the subsequent three debates, there were four that year, people didn't talk about that anymore. And I don't think anybody talked about the experience issue after that first debate.
I was interested in a piece that Anna Quinlan wrote in Newsweek. I don't know if you've seen this. It's titled
No.
Obama the Unruffled. And there is something, I don't normally am not taken by somebody's demeanor, but so much has been made of this. And she talks about how he's captured the attention and the approval of even those who a year ago would have been skeptical or hostile. The guy is steady. His campaign has now made the word its mantra, and boy, has he earned the right. There's rarely been a moment when the U.S. needed an unflappable leader more, and there's rarely been a candidate who has so steadfastly refused to rattle. That is so true. You can't rattle this guy, can you?
Well, it seems that way. And he also has a lot of other very positive personal qualities that I think are what are behind this amazing election that we've seen in his candidacy. Coming, you know, really, I mean, when you look at it on paper, he was just elected to the Senate 2004. I mean, this is, I'm hard-pressed to find another example of someone coming up so fast in national politics. Well, you have to look for those personal qualities that have drawn millions of people to him. And Kennedy was, you know, it was a similar thing to Kennedy. Kennedy had a lot of personal magnetism that people came to know during the campaign that it wasn't known before.
All right, let's go to Larry from Madison. Hi, Larry.
Oh, thank you. Previous caller said Obama is not exercising leadership on Social Security. I disagree. Obama is a leader in supporting the present Social Security system against attack by the Republican Party, which for many years has wanted to privatize it, which equates to destroying it. The caller seems to be confusing leadership with advocating change. But leadership can also mean leading to defend something. Social Security today is strong. People who want to destroy it claim that it's in serious financial crisis. George Bush even falsely claimed that it is bankrupt. It is paying out somewhat more right now than it's bringing in revenues, but a few small adjustments would render it solvent for the next 75 years.
Alexander, you want to comment?
I mean, it is certainly a core issue in American politics. You know, you can go back to President Eisenhower in 1952, who was on domestic issues was considered very conservative. And he said in a letter to his brother, he said the political party that attempts to campaign against Social Security will be a political party heard from no more. In other words, he was saying we as Republicans have got to embrace Social Security. Remember, this was only a decade or two after Social Security had been put into place. So I disagree with the caller in a sense that I don't think Republicans want to destroy Social Security. I think there's room for an honest debate on how to make it more effective, but that honest debate gets caught up, I think, in a very emotional dispute, and that's what we're seeing in the campaign. I think.
All things political is what you hear Mondays at 9, and we are going to continue with more of your phone calls in just one moment. Our number is 800-486-8655, and Professor Alexander Lamas is our guest. He's Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, editor of Southern Politics in the 90s, and author of The Two-Party South. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second of our program today, we'll be talking about dyslexia, a language-based disorder that affects 15 to 20% of the American population. How is it diagnosed and what services are available in order to allow young people particularly, but adults as well, to be able to read, write, spell, and comprehend? We go back to phone calls now. Mary from Milwaukee is next. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning, Kathleen, and good morning, Professor. I have a question about Colin Powell's words yesterday about Bill Ayers and bringing him up as a washed-out former terrorist and kind of addressing that. Do you think that that takes some of the stuffing out of McCain's own campaign to convince people that he's connected to terrorists, and also his TV ads? Does that take some of the credibility out of that, or doesn't it have any impact?
Yes, I think that certainly does have an effect for anyone who's still interested in that issue. It's hard to say how that's playing out. You know, in the third debate, Senator McCain used that phrase. You know, I'm not interested in a washed out terrorist, and then went on to other subjects. But the issue apparently still comes up in ads and in some of those robocalls that are going out too. But it's hard to say if it's been put to rest. I think any objective person who looks at it, well, you'll have to see that Obama is not associating or palling around with terrorists. He had a casual association with someone whose acts he denounced and pointed out that it occurred when he was 8 years old.
Thanks very much for the call, Mary. We go to Art from Milwaukee. Hi, Art.
Hi. I just came back from a lawyer's civil rights conference in Michigan, and I've done election protection in Wisconsin and hope to again this November. And one of the speakers at the conference projected that should Obama be elected, the type of white populist, racist, anti-immigrant opposition that's likely to be mounted. And, you know, driving back and hearing, you know, the claims of the elections, you know, going to be stolen by Acorn, and, you know, these poor black people are the cause of the economic crisis. And then this morning hearing of an Obama canvasser who was physically attacked in Caledonia, where I've canvassed once for the Young Republicans earlier in my career, but was physically, you know, grabbed by the hair and gets her hair, head was pounded around, and the guy admits doing that because he was so upset that he went, you know, was arguing with her about how the election was about to be stolen. These are scary times, and I really hope that, you know, I hear from Obama an appeal, and I think a successful one to bring the country together. And I just see some of the opposition as being very scary, and I certainly hope that McCain and Palin will disassociate themselves from that, because people have been predicting that this might encourage some crazy people to do some crazy things, and we're seeing that apparently happening.
Alexander.
Well, it is tense, but, you know, if you look back to past elections, we've had our tense elections. Think of 1968, and this, the spirit of the times then. I remember, you know, from documentaries that Hubert Humphrey had very vicious agitators at his rallies, and I think Richard Nixon did too, and of course we had a lot of violence in the streets, both racial violence as well as anti-war protests that led to violence, and so I hope these are isolated examples, but, you know, but everybody's alert to this, I think.
Thanks very much for your call. Let's go next to Susan from Milwaukee. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning, Kathleen and Professor. Yeah, I did want to speak just briefly to the previous caller. I do think that there are extreme people on either side of the party, and hopefully, you know, none of that will get out of control. I just wanted to express some of my concern with Senator Obama is that I feel like we've only known how he has voted for the past 4 years, and I feel like the main portion of his platform has only become known recently. You know, the American Democratic Association has placed him left of Hillary and left of Kennedy. I mean, I think when he starts now talking about how he's going to spread the wealth and redistribute income, I think now it is becoming clear that he is a very liberal Democrat, that he is practically, you know, a socialist. And I'm not quite sure voters realize that Obama as a Democratic candidate, I think, is really a liberal Democrat, and I think really demonstrates how he wants to put socialism into our country?
Well, I think it's hard to separate out some of the people you mentioned, like Senator Clinton and Senator Kennedy and Obama on the issues. The reference to share the wealth comment reminds me of or spread the wealth, I guess was the quote, reminds me of the share the wealth campaigns of Huey Long in the 1920s and 30s, which attracted a lot of attention. But Huey Long was no socialist, and I don't think socialism has much of a following in this country. I mean, at its core, socialism is government ownership of the means of production. Even though we've seen some government ownership now lately in the banking industry, that was done under a Republican administration. But my guess is that you're not going to find a President Obama much out of step with the liberal wing of the Democratic Party as identified by Senator Clinton and Kennedy and Biden and the others. Now, they have a strong liberal agenda. There's no question about that. And in office, especially with the Democratic majorities, they may very well produce considerable liberal legislation. But I don't think you're going to be able to call it socialist.
What do you think the chances are of the Senate getting 60 Democrats?
I think it's possible.
Do you?
The Senate map looks very good for the Democrats. I mean, they would have to, of course, win every one of the close races. I didn't think they could do it in 2006. And that was an amazing election night to see each of those close elections, like Virginia and Montana, all fall very narrowly to the Democrats. So it's hard to say, if Obama does win fairly substantially, and we don't know that it's going to be the case yet. If he does, that will certainly help Democrats win Senate seats.
Thank you, Susan, very much for your call. Let's go to Liz from Heartland next. Hi, Liz.
Hi. That is exactly my question about the possibility of Democratic control in the Senate and the House and then in the presidency if Obama wins. Don't you think that people would maybe start to realize that having a check on at least one within one branch of government helps us all? I don't know if people really realize the ramifications of having that.
Yeah, I don't think it's been shown that that voters actually value that thought when they cast a ballot. And even though it's talked about a lot that people are going in and coming up with a split ticket result that way. But if you just look back to when Bill Clinton was elected in 1992, he came in with reasonably large Democratic majorities, and I don't think anyone can look back on that period and see that there was a majority running roughshod over the country. I mean, there was, and probably the same thing would happen again. The members of both the Senate and the House, while a majority who might be Democratic share a lot of things in common, they also represent a lot of different interests, rural, urban, you name it, free trade, more restrictive trade, a whole bunch of other issues make their way into the legislative struggle.
Thanks for the call. We have time for probably one more phone call. Deneen from Lodi. Hi, Deneen.
Well, good morning, Kathleen and Professor. Thanks for taking my call. One of the things I think that may not have been mentioned this morning is a very important endorsement by the Chicago Tribune, which has never in its entire history endorsed a Democrat for president. And one of the things that they note is that, and I quote, Barack Obama is deeply grounded in the best aspirations of this country. And they give just a terrific endorsement, and I would ask that people just read that.
I haven't read that yet, but I'm going to look it up. I did read the Los Angeles Times editorial Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and it probably was along the same lines. When you think back on, what candidates have to go through in this grueling struggle, and for Obama and for Hillary Clinton and McCain and the others.
What a grueling road,
amazing.
Yeah.
and long.
Oh, man.
So when they get this far, the two who make it, and then they can read such nice words being said about them, they certainly must feel pretty good. And I'm sure that for Obama to have the Chicago Tribune's endorsement and to be the only Democrat to ever get it must be really something.
You know, I worked for the Tribune Company years ago, Deneen, and I had no idea that paper was that old. 160-something, huh?
I know it. It endorsed Abraham Lincoln was its first presidential endorsement.
1860. My.
Yes.
But you knew it was the world's greatest paper, right?
Yeah. Oh, we had to know that working for you. Thanks very much, Deneen, for your call.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Professor Lamas, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Enjoyed the hour. It was fun. I always love these hours, all things political. And you can bet your bottom dollar that we'll be talking more politics in the weeks ahead, because it's getting so close. Professor Alexander Lamas, our guest, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. News is coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return with another hour of conversation, so please stay with us as we talk about dyslexia. I'm Kathleen Dunn. It's a minute before the hour, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.